इतिहास द इंडियन हिस्ट्री पॉडकास्ट।
हाय एंड वेलकम बैक टू इंडिया एट 70 हियर एट इतिहास। इंडिया एट 70 एज अ सीजन टॉक्स अबाउट ऑल द इम्पॉर्टेंट थिंग्स, ऑल द लैंडमार्क इवेंट्स विच हैपेंड इन इंडिया इन द पास्ट 70 ईयर्स आफ्टर इंडिपेंडेंस, विच हैव लेफ्ट अ ग्रेट मार्क ऑन इंडिया, ऑन द वे इंडिया इज परसीव टू बी, आइदर इन पॉजिटिव और इन नेगेटिव वे। Earlier, we had talked about the whole Babri Masjid demolition issue in the episode, The Torn Social Fabric. And we discussed how the Ram Janmabhoomi issue came into existence, what was the aftermath of that, how Babri Masjid got demolished, and subsequently how there were riots countrywide and how the social fabric of our country has been torn since then. And unfortunately, it is getting more and more torn as the day passes. It has now been 25 years since the Babri demolition happened, since the Bombay blasts took place. And yet, our country is becoming more fragmented and more torn day by day. A phenomena that is very, very real in our day-to-day lives and a phenomena that needs to be talked about. To talk about this particular issue, I have Dr. Sajjan Kumar. Dr. Sajjan Kumar is a political analyst, is a political researcher, and also an author of a recently released book called Everyday Communalism. Welcome to Itihas, Sajjan. It's a privilege to have you here. And let's go back 25 years ago to 1992 or 93.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is when we say that there was a major tearing of the social fabric, so to say.
Yeah.
We always like to believe that India was somehow secular in whatever way possible before that particular event. And after 93, it is deteriorating day by day.
Yeah.
How has the shift been? Where can we see or how's the trajectory been of this whole change?
Yeah. 1980s is the decade wherein we see the centrality of the politics of identity, it is emerging. Okay, by 70s, dominant one-party rule, that is Congress rule, has been challenged decisively during the time of emergency.
Mm.
And therefore, a kind of Nehruvian idealism that was there was severely jolted. But then the disillusionment was not complete with the political structure.
Okay.
Okay, a faith was posed into the alternative political institution led by non-Congress opposition parties under the leadership of Jayaprakash Narayan, who still had the social and political capital.
Correct.
The failure of the Janata experiment or Janata party experiment, sealed the fate of a faith into the political institution, namely political parties.
Okay.
So disillusionment with the political structure that has inherited the legacy of the freedom struggle is complete. So once we see that the Nehruvian belief that modern India can shape its faith along the ideals that we enshrined in the preamble of our constitution,
yes.
70s is the decade wherein you see all these are coming to a grand end and there is a grand disillusionment.
Mm.
You are disillusioned with the political structures, political institutions, political actors.
Right.
So 80s is the decade wherein you see caste-based assertions.
Yeah.
Depending upon your ideological perspective, you may see it as progressive or regressive.
Mm-hmm.
80s is the time when you see religious-based assertions is taking place. Now, what is happening in 80s? That suddenly the cultural realm is replacing this modernist secular understanding and you want the cultural assertion to go and to be extended into the public realm also.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this cultural realm is not something which is homogeneous.
Right.
To a group, say Ambedkarite, it is the question of dignity and therefore the caste.
Right.
To the Hindutva group, it is a question of their religious assertion that they feel has been wrongly suppressed and brushed under the carpet, which was, and secularism in a very alien and top-down model was imposed over the society which had its own religious sensibilities.
Mm.
And that's what happened, that suddenly we find that it all culminated in a very ugly way with the demolition of Babri Masjid and then the aftermath we all know. Suddenly you see when cultural assertion is there in multiple form, progressive as well as the regressive form, political parties are ready to encash upon it.
Mm.
So we have to understand that it is not just the handiwork of a political party or just one political party and the others. It is also something that is happening within the realm of the society at a much profound way.
Mm.
The society is willing to go by the populist assertions around the cultural contours, and it expects the political actors and institutions, that is the political parties, to conform to it. We have to take three circles, concentric. One is the domestic realm that is happening within India. Second is the realm of your regional context, South Asia, what is happening from Pakistan, cross-border terrorism, issue of Kashmir in 90s emerging, the Kashmiri Pandits getting displaced from their home and becoming a refugee in their own country, and then the politics around that thing is happening.
Even Sri Lanka.
Tamil issue and everything. So 90s that way, you see, is a realm that first your domestic realm, then the regional context of South Asia, the issues with your neighborhood, and third is the international context where suddenly the end of Cold War and demise of Soviet Union. So these three contexts now are talking to each other. What was the churning and what was the impact of post Babri Masjid? First thing is that, you see, this is the time when an entire new generation of youths are emerging, which had no imagination about either emergency or Nehruvian
era.
Okay, this is a time when by late 1980s, voting age has been reduced from 21 to 18. So a new generation is there, which doesn't only have the political opinion, because in globalization era, you also are aware about what is happening around you,
right,
in your neighborhood, in your country, and in the international context. And you see a synchronization in all the three spheres, wherein the assertion of cultures is something that is zealous. So your domestic realm, your regional context of South Asia, and then the international realm are validating and endorsing each other. So in that sense, what happens that you see suddenly the cultural identity is coming to the core of two factors. This generation is full of aspiration. At the same time, this generation is also full of anxiety. So aspirational as an economic class and full of anxieties as a cultural category. Every time when you are obsessed with your identity, you are anxious that you are going to lose your rootings. You feel as uprooted, because market is bringing a profound change. It is no more the economy that is controlled by the state. So in that sense, when cultural categories are having an easy fit with economic aspiration, the question of defining who we are is getting more and more defined with who we are not. Who we are not. And therefore, the process of constitution of a common cultural other is emerging. And in that sense, since this generation is very aware in that everywhere, the question of Islamic terrorism or Islam as a common other of an aspirational globalized community is happening. So suddenly the Islamic identity is emerging not only as a problematic and other identity in Indian case, but it is something that is getting endorsed and validated from the international and regional context. Who are the ones who are threatening the security of India? Who are the ones who are threatening the social fabric of India? Who are the ones because of which our own community members like Kashmiri Pandits are getting reduced to the status of refugees? Who are the ones who are not only creating troubles in Indian case? It is not a exception, Indian exceptionalism. It is something that everywhere you see that they are emerging as the other of a globalized aspirational class.
Plus, you already have an other existing in form of Pakistan, which is a religion-based.
So what happens? A societal churning and shift into a from a secular common sense to a cultural common sense is not only confined to the societal realm, but it is also shifting to the institutions of the state. Now, I'll give you one instance. Earlier, it is India as a country always had faced a challenge to its integrity and unity. You had secessionist movement in Northeast, Kashmir, inside Punjab you have faced. So that was there. But whenever you see the security experts or security community, when they used to analyze the causality, why it is happening. So you'll say until early 80s or till 70s, no one is naming the causes of the threat to India's unity, be it in terms of Northeastern secessionist movement, the question of Nagaland, Mizoram or Manipur or Kashmir or Punjab Khalistan movement. Despite the fact that a community or a religious identity is at the forefront, which is demanding a secessionist demand, which is threatening country's unity. But with 1990s, you will see suddenly people are feeling at ease in terms of saying in their analysis that a particular community is vulnerable to be radicalized and pose a threat to the integrity and unity of the
India.
Earlier, even if that you find a community is vulnerable and which is getting radicalized for multiple reasons, that they have assistance from your neighboring countries or the forces that want to destabilize the country, in your analysis used to, avoid or restrain yourself from naming a community as a factor that may pose a threat to the integrity of the... But 90s not. Why? Because even in the international context, you are finding a community is being named by the big experts, international security experts, by even the US experts, security experts, that Islam and Islamic radicalism is a threat to the liberal world. So what is happening, that it is getting a kind of legitimacy.
Yes.
It becomes a kind of a common sense.
Yes. Since it was endorsed by the USA, you also have to say that yes, Islam is actually...
Yeah, it is becoming a kind of a common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you see the kind of popular, polemical, rhetorical instances are coming that not all Muslims are terrorists, but all terrorists are Muslims.
Yeah.
So these kind of rhetorical and polemical statements, which are feeding the already existing societal prejudices against Islam, because India has a history of societal and communal prejudices against each other.
Yeah.
Now it is acquiring also institutional presence. Now, what happens? The moment communal common sense is becoming a mainstream common sense, not only of society, but also of the institution of the states, it gives incentives to the forces in the society who are waiting to tap and encash upon the opportunity.
Right.
At the end of the 20th century, the new millennium is beginning with not a new hope and new liberal order. It is beginning with 9/11. Liberal world and Islamic world are directly at loggerheads.
Yeah, which sort of validates your Islamophobia even more.
Even more. So what happens? So in that sense, you see, because the world is now globalized, people are aware about what is happening in one part of the country. Okay. So in Indian context, we have faced the Kargil war. Our Kashmir problem has not been resolved. And in that instance, what is happening, that our domestic politics is also getting shaped and constituted around that line. So question is not just about one Hindutva organization or one common sense. It is happening from both the sides. Okay, you say the roles of Islamic organizations like Jamaat-e-Islami, Jamaat-e-Ulema-e-Hind and others. It's increasing, and their sway over the Muslim community in India is increasing. In terms of the Muslim community, you will see that very localized identities and practices are now, with new generation, it is getting purified. Wahhabism and other practices, okay, suddenly is increasing. On the other hand, what is happening? People don't recognize that Hindutva is not just about RSS or BJP. It is about intra-Hindutva rivalry that people are not recognizing. And that are, at least RSS has an institutional sense.
Correct.
That it wants to privilege the cultural contours of Hindus as the mainstream cultural contour of India.
Yeah. Hindu Rashtra.
Hindu Rashtra. Okay, but it has invested a great deal into its own version of institutional sense.
Yes.
But there are emerging a very fluid and floating Hindutva organizations, like say in Maharashtra, Shiv Sena is happening. What was the need for Shiv Sena when already there is RSS, owes its origin in Maharashtra. And suddenly you see Shiv Sena, it emerges as an ethnic party, okay, for the pride of the Maharashtrian and Marathis.
Right.
Suddenly by 1990s, what is happening? It is championing the cause of Hindutva. Okay. In UP, by the 2002 and 3, you see Yogi Adityanath, who now has come to the fold of BJP, he establishes Hindu Yuva Vahini, which is much more radical. When you have VHP, when you have Bajrang Dal, when you have ABVP, when you have BJP, when you have RSS, what was the need to constitute a new organization? So what is happening, that you see the cultural context by late 1990s or in the aftermath of Babri Masjid, the societal churning and rupture is so commonsensical and it's so kind of normal that you think that you need to emerge as the savior of Hindu interest against a real or imagined Islamic threat. So across India, you see many organizations are emerging, which is outside the fold of RSS. But they are within the fold of larger Hindutva discourse.
Even in Karnataka, a couple of years ago, there was the Shri Ram Sena.
Shri Ram
Sena. Karni Sena last
Karni
year in Rajasthan.
Sena. So, entering the pub, assaulting the people. So, it's a discourse which is like a free-for-all. But one doesn't recognize that there is within Hindutva, intra-Hindutva rivalry.
Right.
They are competing with each other
right.
to emerge as a better savior of the Hindu interest.
Yeah.
Why is it happening? Why it was not happening in 80s or 70s or 60s? Because the Islamophobia and Islam as a problematic category in popular perception was already there.
Mm.
But why is it that we were not witnessing the mushrooming of multiple organizations which are eager to champion or at least tap upon the popular sentiment wherein you find that Hindu interest is threatened? Why is it that it's not just the Indians living in metropolitan or countryside who are feeling threatened by a real or imagined Islamic threat?
Right.
But why is that also the NRIs?
Yeah.
Living into the Western countries, they also suddenly start feeling a nostalgia for a cultural assertions. It is the context which is happening at the, as I said, the co-centric layer, at the three levels, international, regional, that is South Asian level, and the domestic level.
Yeah.
They are endorsing and validating each other. So it is emerging something which is a common sense, which is a normalized everyday affair, which is a fact. So suddenly when something becomes a part of the popular prejudice, you have internalized the perception as something which is a concrete reality. So there would be many organizations who may not create the societal rupture, but who would like to perpetuate it and intensify it.
Right.
So that is why today, if you see what is happening, that be it Maharashtra, or be it Karnataka, or be it what happened in UP or Bihar, suddenly you see that ethnic demands are getting a religious contour. So in Assam, the Bangladesh, illegal Bangladeshi Muslim, immigration is no more just an ethnic thing. It is something that you can very easily locate them within the larger fold of Hindutva.
Yeah.
Because remember, the ethnic demand in 1980s was also against the Hindu Bengalis,
right?
Marwaris,
right.
Biharis. But now a political discourse can go and channelize the entire issue, which has a validate demand, into a religious contour. And Islam everywhere is emerging a dominant common other, a common enemy.
Yeah.
What has happened that Islamophobia and the pre-existing popular prejudice against the Muslims, now it is no more episodic, that you need an episode or one event to trigger, and then there used to be a big communal riots, society would be divided, but then there after that normalcy would return and both community will come together. Now it is no more the episodic, big, spectacular communal riots. Now this is a time wherein it has led to the communalization of everyday life. The petty and mundane issues has been communalized. It is no more episodic. It is a matter of everyday phenomenon.
Right. Well, communalism seeping into our day-to-day lives is indeed a very, very important point, and we need to understand how exactly it is happening and if at all there is a way to get out of this whole thing, which we plan to discuss in the next episode. So stay tuned.